and welcome to a new episode of the Between the Posts podcast. Today we will focus on the Premier League as we will analyze the match between Arsenal and Manchester United. In previous decades, this was the game of the Premier League. Sadly, it has become less relevant over the years, but I think we did get to see at least an interesting tactical clash we can focus on in our tactical analysis podcast. Even though it was the first 0-0 ever on the podcast, the first goalless draw ever that we cover. My name is Erik Elias, and with me here to discuss this match, also of Between the Posts, Joel Parker. Joel, welcome.
Hello, Erik. Hello, listener. It's a pleasure to be on, and it's only right that my first game, or second game, actually, that I cover is a 0-0 draw. So yeah, what a pleasure it is to be on.
Bit unlucky. For those wondering, Jose couldn't make it this weekend, but we have some solid backup in Joel. So let's dive right into it. Joel, you also wrote the match report, which can be found on our website. And as you know, we always start with the lineups. So do you want to take Arsenal or Man U? What do you want to do?
I will take Arsenal, who really had the two biggest omissions from this game, coming on the left-hand side, which was Kieran Tierney and Aubameyang, both missing from this game. But other than that, it was the pretty usual lineup you come to expect with Arsenal. But Leno was in goal. Hector Bellerin and Cedric Soares as fullbacks. Rob Holding and David Luiz in the centre-back positions. In front of them, Thomas Partey and Granit Xhaka form the double pivot. And then you had the attacking line of Nicolas Pepe, Emil Smith-Rowe, who played as a 10, and Martinelli, who was on the left side of the attack. And that was completed up front with Alexandre Lacazette.
Yeah, so talk a bit about that line of three behind Lacazette. Because basically, if everyone is fit now in the post-winter squad, I don't think those three guys start, do they? Pepe, Smith-Rowe and Martinelli.
Yeah, in recent weeks, the landscape of the three has changed quite a bit. Finally, Arteta has put a number 10 in, an actual number 10, which has connected their attack a lot better, which we'll get into. So, yeah, the dynamism has really changed. There's no Willian and Aubameyang out injured. So, younger players and better results so far under Arteta.
Yeah, and one of the players I really like is Martinelli, who came from Brazil. He has not really been consistent, but I think he can grow into a starting player for them. And, of course, I think the starting number 10 going forward will be Ødegaard, which they just got from Real Madrid. For Manchester United, as has been the case often in big games, it was a 4-2-3-1 from Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. De Gea in goal, back four, no surprises. Wan-Bissaka, Lindelof, Maguire, Shaw. McTominay and Fred as the double pivot, which has been, as we can call it, the big game choice in the double pivot. And for those of you that don't know, a double pivot is nothing more than two holding midfielders playing next to each other. Then in the line of three behind the striker at Man U, there was some things to talk about as well, because Rashford played on the right, Bruno Fernandes as the 10 and Pogba on the left. So Bruno Fernandes as the 10, I don't think anyone argues about that. That's completely logical. He's done so well since he arrived. But then you have Rashford on the right and Pogba being played on the wing. Last week against Liverpool, Manchester United played Pogba on the right wing and now on the left wing. And I don't like this for a couple of reasons. One, I think Rashford's best position is left winger. Then it is striker, then it is right winger. So basically, your best prolific attacker you put in a position that's less suited for him. I think that's not so smart. And also, I think Pogba is now playing on the left, but not with the creative license you expect from a guy playing on the left, because he was kind of not drifting all over the field like you would expect from a left winger like Pogba. He was more or less playing out of position. I don't know. I don't think how he feels about it himself. We'll talk about that a bit more later, but I don't think that's the optimal way to set this team up. And as the striker, a pure number 9 in Cavani, which I do think suits Bruno well as the number 10, which means Martial is benched. Okay, I think that kind of makes sense.
To me, that lineup seems extremely caution-based, which has sort of become accustomed to after they lost 6-1 to Tottenham. Ever since then, it's been very, very defensive-minded. I think that's the reason why you've got Pogba, why you've got Rashford to take up those defensive positions. But
yeah, true.
You'd also expect Manchester United in a game like this to be a bit more inventive.
Yeah, but if you look at that double pivot, McTominay and Fred, like McTominay is a defensive midfielder. Fred, He's not a purely defensive midfielder, but he's also not a box-to-box or a creative number eight or something. He's more of a defensive midfielder, if you should categorize him that way. And then you play a pure midfielder on the left in Pogba. So in terms of profile, it's very cautious.
Yeah, one thing I would say about Fred is that he's definitely got a better passing range than what Scott McTominay has. There was a couple of occasions in this game where Fred made one or two quite nice passes towards Pogba in that left half space. But other than that, it is quite negative.
Yeah, but their approach was not that negative, I have to say that. Yeah, let's start with the game. Yeah, we saw quite some pressing from both sides. Overall, in the first half, Manchester United had over 62% possession. But for narrative reasons, let's start about how Arsenal tried to press Man U when they built up. So Man U start their build-up, 4-2-3-1. Arsenal press, what do we see, Joel?
We see Arsenal set up kind of in a very similar sort of positioning as to Manchester United, in which case it's more of a 4-4-2, which could look more of a 4-4-1-1 when they drop back into the medium block. In this, you have Lacazette and Smith Rowe from the front line, which was really good at cutting off McTominay and Fred. So Manchester United from deep were already looking to their fullbacks in chance to progress the ball up the pitch. The problem is that Manchester United's fullbacks are also quite limited in possession. I think that's fair to say. I think Wan-Bissaka comes a lot more centrally, which cuts off the angles towards Rashford. So once the ball was coming to Wan-Bissaka, the ball was moving back inside towards the centre-backs again. And it wasn't until Arsenal were dropping a little bit deeper in their medium block that you saw Manchester United actually moving forward with the ball. So already Manchester United were a little bit unbalanced when building, looked quite passive, were passing the ball extremely sideways and not really penetrating the lines that you would kind of expect from Manchester United. So when Arsenal were pressing, they were matching them quite well, created a number of turnovers and had actually the better of the chances for them first 20-25 minutes. But this all led to Arsenal having really erratic shots from the first 20-25 minutes of the game. I mean, the reason why they were so well at moving the ball was mainly because of Smith Rowe, who I think is really, really good between the lines. Yeah. He connected with Pepe quite a lot. Yes. So when Manchester United tried to counter-press, Smith Rowe was a very good wall pass option, predominantly on the right-hand side. So when Pepe would receive, he would receive with his face towards goal and only a couple of defenders that were capable of dealing with it. But there was a number of occasions in that first half where I thought Arsenal created a lot of good turnovers in the middle third and in really decent positions. And because Man United's counter-press wasn't too great, Arsenal were getting into really decent positions where it was just their attackers against their defensive line. But on a number of occasions, it was just really bad decision-making. I mean, one chance from Alexandre Lacazette, for example, Martinelli made quite a nice interception and Arsenal found themselves in a lot of space with a 3-3. And in that, you had Lindelof that was kind of being occupied with Lacazette on the ball and Pepe, who was between Maguire and Shaw, so had the occupation of both.
I agree with you that the team overall for me, the theme of the match of the first half for me was that Arsenal, I think, did pretty, if we're honest, they did pretty okay against Manchester United when it came to counter-attacking. And what you say, some of their decision-making in the final third was just not good, but I think Pepe and especially Smith Rowe did a really good job in creating those things on the counter-attack in first place, you know? So I think that they did that well, at least.
Definitely. I think they got into some really, really good positions, but there was just a good number of occasions where there was a better option to pass out wide and into space, but you saw a shot from Lacazette, which didn't really test De Gea, saw a shot from Partey, which skewed miles wide. I think Pepe himself had another chance, which went a little bit closer, if my memory serves correct. But overall, Arsenal's pressing matched Man United's build up quite well, but didn't really make a lot out of the transitions that they had developed.
No, so that's basically Arsenal for the first half. But if we look at some possession stats, I mentioned it earlier. Manchester United in the first half had 62% possession. And then if you think about that, like Arsenal, who are set up under Arteta, you know, famously assisting Guardiola, and he tries to impose that game on them as well. And then Manchester United are coached by Solskjaer, who's a bit more pragmatic, who doesn't care if he has to counterattack in big games. And then you see a first half like this, where Manchester United has the bulk of possession because they press Arsenal well. That's quite an observation, right? Like, I didn't expect that beforehand.
I think it's quite interesting because when you look at, I mean, it's quite, I know it's quite bland to just use the goals that have been conceded throughout the league, but Man City have only conceded 13. Then it's Tottenham with 20, and Arsenal have the same amount. And considering that only a month ago we was talking about Arteta in a crisis, Arsenal in a crisis, I mean, I'm guilty party in that. But defensively, Arsenal are still an okay team. I think they're still quite good. They still hold their shape well. And defensively, their numbers are still quite good.
Yeah, it's mostly a case of them having to really improve their offensive numbers without losing the defensive stability. But the point I was making was also that Man U was just pressing Arsenal really well. And Arsenal with their build-up structure, then with Granit Xhaka dropping into the defense, then with Xhaka playing a bit more in front, with Emile Smith-Rowe dropping in as well. Like, they could not build up against the Manchester United press, which was partly done by Cavani, Fernandes, Pogba, Fred joining in from midfield with McTominay holding. So I thought that was very interesting that in a, we can say big game, even though Arsenal are not really high in the league table, but still in a big game, that they choose to press this high and that they win the ball back so often. And that's also my biggest point of critique for Manchester United in the first half, because I think they had like 10, 12, 15 times that they won the ball in Arsenal's half, but they didn't do enough with it. And then it becomes the overall theme of the first half, right, Joel? With good transitions, good pressing, but not so much for the final third ball, which was, yeah, can we say Bruno did not play his best match from a creative point of view? Can we say that?
I think it's quite interesting because we really associate Bruno as this real classic number 10 that roams across the pitch, that really combines play with Manchester United attacks. But it's not really the case, especially at this game. One thing that I thought was quite interesting with Pogba on the left, he's a player that when he's moving in the half space, he can really attract players around him. And I think that's quite good. But you didn't really see any of that in this game. What I was kind of getting at with Man United's attack is that it would funnel towards the sideline of the pitch, but there's no real option to go back inside to move vertically and pull Arsenal's defensive shape well out of position once they got back in that rest defence. So there was a lot of sideways passing, just trying to pick holes through Arsenal's defensive shape, and it wasn't really working.
No, and we have to say one more thing about the tactics, because after 37 minutes, Scott McTominay was injured, which meant we got to see a Pogba and Fred double pivot playing next to each other, and Martial being introduced as the left winger. So Pogba moved to midfield, Martial is the left winger. And I think, Joel, last season when Man U won all those games, I think it was mostly done with this midfield, Pogba and Fred holding and Fernandes just in front.
I think with that change, you're kind of expecting more inventiveness from Manchester United on the ball, but that wasn't really the case during this game. I think because in the way that they set up, you often see Fernandes and Cavani already behind the midfield line. So they're already kind of set for the attack without really crowbarring the midfield and the attack together. So there was a big disconnect, which just led to poor ball circulation for Man United's half.
Yeah, one more point I make before we go into second half. I touched on it earlier in the lineups, but I think this 4-2-3-1, which we saw in the first half, is not optimized to get Rashford into good positions, which I think is a shame. He often receives the ball 40, 45 yards from the goal, facing a left winger and the left back. He has runners to choose out from. He then becomes a passer. I don't think that's his best role. I think he's a runner who has to take dribblers on. And this was a team for the entire match. But his decision-making on the ball, I was really disappointed by it. I thought it was quite, yeah, it's a bit of a bad word, but I thought it was just plain dumb at times, you know? Not to criticize too much because it's hard, but when he could take a shot, he lays it off. When he could take a dribble, he goes for a pass. When he has to pick out a pass, he goes for a dribble. Like, I'm not really used to see that of him, but I thought from a purely decision-making perspective, he was maybe one of the worst players on the pitch, and that's a shame.
I think what's quite another kind of deficiency from that right side is due to the profiles that really he was having to deal with. I mean, he has Wan-Bissaka, who is really known for his defensive duties, but not really providing the overlapping runs or the penetration you would see from your usual fullbacks, whilst also having Scott McTominay, who was mostly playing on that right side. Mm-hmm. So when attacks were sort of funneling down that channel, there was a lot of reliance on Marcus Rashford to go and do something. And as you say, with, I know it's a generalization to say, mm-hmm. but Marcus Rashford on the ball wasn't really producing a lot. He was having to be relied on by his other options down that right side. But as you say, I completely agree with your points.
Yeah, it's a good addition you make. Moving into the second half, I think the game became more even. I think the possession was more evenly distributed. I think the chances were more evenly distributed in the second half. Talk a bit about how Arsenal got back into the game. Like, they got on the ball more. Why? Why were they better in possession?
I think their setup is a little bit out of the two teams. I think the way that with Xhaka moving to that left side, there was a little bit more equipped maybe to get past Man United's defensive shape, which I think their defensive shape is quite interesting because to me, they're either not really that compact and quite stretched out, or they're far too clustered centrally, which leaves a lot of space on the flanks. I mean, there was one chance a couple of minutes into the second half where Pepe feeds Bellerin mm-hmm. out towards the right, which leads to a cross back inside. But if you look at Man United's defensive shape, it's mm-hmm. extremely clustered and the fullbacks are really pinned in by Arsenal's players on that channel. And that leaves Bellerin in a lot of space to cross the ball and Willian, who came on at the start of the second half, to get on the ball. And if it wasn't for a first touch that he makes, Wan-Bissaka doesn't fully recover. So could have been a lot better chance there, but I just thought it summed up Manchester United out of possession.
Yeah, and I think that was the first like really big chance for Arsenal, right?
Yeah, that's true. And then even a couple of minutes later, you had Willian mm-hmm. in possession making that run down the left and he crosses the ball back inside into Pepe, who receives just on the edge of the area. Mm-hmm. But he's in so much space. Originally, the shot is blocked by Harry Maguire. But in those occasions, in those situations, you wouldn't expect a cross to come outswinging like that mm-hmm. towards a receiver just on the edge of the box and have so much time and space in possession. I thought it was quite weird.
Yes, and you mentioned Maguire. He always gets the most stick if he plays a bad game. So let me single out. He played a good game yesterday.
Very true.
Yeah, we should also balance that because it's not news when somebody plays good, apparently, but it's always news when somebody plays bad. I also think that the level Manchester United played at in the first half, most notably without the ball, but okay, in possession they were also okay. I think they didn't sustain that. I think their position play, their mechanisms in possession are just not good enough for that. And one example I have from that is in their double pivot. If you look at Fred and Pogba, who played together in the second half, I think the mechanisms are just not there for them to effectively progress the ball that way. So those two players are often in the same line, which means you cannot create an angle to play forward, for example, even though Pogba is very good at that. And that, Joel, that's pure coaching. So I think Solskjaer has done a pragmatic job. I don't think he's done bad, but I do still think that in possession, he does not offer his team like the help for them to control a match, you know. And I think we saw that in the second half again.
Definitely. I think there was, with as you say, with Manchester United trying to build, the angles weren't there. Mm-hmm. And it is to do with the midfielders, but it's also to do with the movement of your attackers. And this is where I just think Fernandes was just really not involved in his team's attacking play.
No, it's strange, right? Because I didn't see a specific tactical plan from Arsenal to get him out of the game or something, but he was just a bit anonymous. Yeah, it can happen. You can always play an anonymous game. But because Manu was so reliant on him, it shows immediately.
Of course. I mean, as you say, he was already picking up the positions kind of next to Cavani without that sort of play really transitioning. So, as you say, with Manchester United in possession, it was just a hell of a lot of sideways passes and hoping that somewhere someone's going to make a run or do something that kind of breaks Arsenal's shape, but that didn't really happen.
No. I have to mention one thing. I said at halftime there were no substitutions, but I made a mistake there because Willian came on for Martinelli. Obviously, Willian had that first big chance for Arsenal, but he wasn't in the starting lineup, so there was one substitution I forgot. And I thought about it because I wanted to mention to you, Joel, that I was a bit surprised about how late both managers were using their subs. Because obviously, Solskjaer had to use one sub in the first half for McTominay, but his first sub was in the 80th minute, Greenwood for Rashford. And then the first sub Arteta made after he subbed in Willian was in the 83rd minute. So I was a bit surprised with that. Like, do you think they were both happy about what they saw on the field? Like, maybe Arteta just doesn't have the attacking depth to do something, but I was surprised by that. I thought maybe introduce Donny van de Beek, maybe you can do a little switch where you put in Alex Telles for an offensive impulse, I don't know. Maybe put in Greenwood earlier, but yeah, it was a bit stale, the match, because of that.
Yeah, it's tricky to say, because Solskjaer isn't. I mean, he has changed his team's shape before, but he doesn't really do it in-game as much as I think he used to. I think he used to change it quite a fair bit when things weren't really going his way. But I think he was kind of just acceptant that this was how the game was going to play out. Yeah. Whilst Arteta does. I was kind of, out of the two managers, I was kind of expecting Arteta to make a change more than what Solskjaer was going to. So as you say, I thought it was quite weird that, because I mean the options were there. And Martin Odegaard only came on with 7 minutes in, so
yeah,
can't really talk too much about that.
I was watching the game, just like you, of course, and then in the first half already, there were camera shots of him warming up already. And I thought, okay, nice. Maybe full second half we can see him. Oh, okay, maybe he comes in the 60th minute. Oh, okay, he comes on with 7 minutes to play in regular time. So that was a bit of a bummer.
So don't get me wrong. I think Smith Rowe is a very good player in that 10. And as I say, he's very good between the lines and kind of skipping that midfield line, mm-hmm. getting players involved, most notably Pepe. But I was, as you say, I was expecting Odegaard to come on. To me, it's the out of the options that were there. It was kind of the obvious choice, and he comes on with 7 minutes left.
Yeah. So 0-0. I think both teams, like, there was not one team who really went for it. I think they both thought, okay, a point, it's okay for us. We have to talk about Cavani, because Cavani, in this match, there were two big chances, right? They were both for Cavani. One came 5 minutes after halftime, good Manchester United attack. One came in the 90th minute, so the last minute of regular play, I think. Talk a little bit about that attack, Joel, and then I have a little theory about that.
I'm going to start with the first attack that United had, because I think out of all the, I mean, we talked a lot about their lack of inventiveness, but this was the one real occasion where Manchester United were quite dynamic on that left side. I also thought Martial had quite a nice bit of movement where he found himself in the blind side. So when he received, mm-hmm. he was in quite a lot of space. Then Luke Shaw was able to make a movement into a really good position, which led to that cutback and Cavani miss, which, as you say, was a big chance. Maybe you should have scored, but I'd say it's difficult because I'm not a world-class striker, so I guess I can't really relate. But yeah, that chance towards the end, it's difficult because it was a cross from Bellerin, and I'm not sure what his vision is really like when he's just about to receive the ball. But judging by his kind of the way he takes the shot, he might have seen it quite late.
Yeah, I think so. But my primary theory about this chance is that you cannot prove this, but it was so vintage Manchester United in these times what we talk about when this was a really big match, Arsenal Man U. It was so vintage for them to score a goal like this in the last minute. Okay, not a great performance, but okay, we still take 3 points. And it is impossible to prove, but like you would expect it to go in the Ferguson era. And if anything, it's just a symbol, it's an illustration of where the club are now as Manchester United, because the contrast between those two eras is so stark, you know? And I think in the Ferguson era, Cavani makes that. We don't know why, we don't know what black magic it is, but it goes in. And now the club is going backwards and it does not go in. Because, yeah, it's a bit harsh maybe, but I think you and me would have had a good chance of scoring that.
I think Solskjaer made quite an interesting comment on that Cavani chance after the game.
What was it?
He was basically saying that, because obviously Solskjaer was a striker, and saying that, well, he got into that position, you were there to miss those chances, which I think was... What am I trying to say here?
To say of a striker, it's good that he comes into the positions and you can make it or you can miss it, but it's good that he is there.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, it is good movement. Cavani has elite movement in front of goal, but I don't know. I think he should score that anyways.
Definitely. I mean, I think this is the tricky thing with Cavani is that he's got very similar traits to Falcao. So he's got a lot of stick for missing those chances. But I also kind of think that Man United are still, at least some of their fans are still in a Falcao mindset. They see a South American with long hair who's come from the French League, regularly scoring against French farmers or whatever, and then come to the Premier League and miss these chances, which I think is extremely harsh.
Maybe you're right.
Because
maybe
his movement is very good. And if it wasn't for them pieces of movement, as Solskjaer said, he wouldn't have been there to miss those chances in the first place.
Yeah, but we should be also less harsh to categorize players like that, you know. South American, long hair, came from France, but they are inherently different players, you know.
Very true. Very, very true. And very good players in their own right.
In the national team, you can see as well, when Cavani played together with Suarez, he could do so much more, Cavani, than only be a pure number nine. He could drop deep, he could play, you could set up a player anyways.
Oh, definitely. That World Cup, that Uruguay, was it 2014? I'm tempted to say 2014, that those two were just really, really,
yeah, 2014, they
interwoven.
In that group stage with Italy, England and Costa Rica?
Yes.
2010, yes. 2010, we beat them in the semi-final, eh? The Dutch.
Yes. Whilst they knocked us out, so...
I squeezed it in the podcast. each week I have one reference to Dutch football. It's sad that Donny van de Beek didn't play, by the way, but okay. Let's go into takeaways. For me, this was really an example of a performance by Arsenal in this stage of the trainership of Arteta. Interesting tactical performance. Interesting. So Xhaka dropping deep. Interesting stuff with their fullbacks. I think a good way of pressing incidentally. But then again, a bad performance. You know, less possession, which I don't think he wants. Less shots, which of course nobody wants. And less quality chances, which not a single manager wants. So it's very much in line with what we see of them this season. Interesting stuff. Some things to pick up. But in the end, a bad performance. And I think if one team should have won here, it was Man United. So Arsenal cannot be too happy here.
As you say, it was a performance that has epitomised them under Arteta, doing nice things in possession. As we mentioned, the decision making and the development of the development of those chances were actually quite good, but so many just erratic shots from weird locations that if you thought, well, maybe if there's a bit more patience Arsenal were able to get into better positions, which would lead to better chances. But nonetheless, I think Arsenal would be a little bit convinced that they didn't concede from late on here. And those two Cavani chances, I think out of the two teams, they'd be a little bit more happier with the draw.
Yeah. Also, from a stats perspective, it's quite logical because Manchester United have scored a lot more goals than our expected goal model thinks. And today it was a bit the case of balancing out because they had good chances, but they didn't score. So
yes. Whilst Man City look inevitable.
Yeah, I think it will be Manchester City for the title. Anyways, if people like this podcast, go read Joel's article, which is up on the website now. BetweenThePost.net is a website about football tactics. We do a lot with stats. We do tactical match reports, which we have a bunch of talented guys like Joel who write those. And it would mean a lot to me if you would check that out. If you haven't already, subscribe, leave a review. We love to see that. If you leave a review, which is 5 stars, then we will analyze a match of your choice. So don't leave that on the table. Joel, thanks so much. Even though your weekend must be really sore because you guys, Everton, lost.
I knew that was coming.
At home, so maybe you can record a podcast about why Everton is losing at home against Newcastle. Who knows? Thanks so much. And we will be back next week. And Joel, thanks so much for filling in for Jose.
Thank you, Eric. Thank you for listening, listener. Pleasure to be back on.
And we will be back next week. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
Bye.